So it's been 48 years, roughly 40 years and one day, since President John F. Kennedy got assassinated in Dallas, Texas, November 22nd, 1963. And still talking about it. Documentaries are still being made about it. And I have two guests on the phone right now who are experts, in my opinion and in your opinion, regarding the Kennedy assassination. Before I start, I want to just get an introduction. I want the gentleman to explain their position so everybody understands where everybody is coming from, so there's no bones about it. The first person is Mr. Tom Rosalie. I've had the pleasure of knowing him for about 8 or 9 years now. I don't think I've heard anyone have excessive knowledge about the assassination than him. Mr. Tom Rosalie, thank you very much for being on here. So if you can give everyone just a brief opinion about what your position is.
My position is that there was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy, and it was covered up by elements of our government and national media, who both repeatedly withheld evidence, altered evidence, destroyed evidence, lied, suborned perjury from witnesses, and intimidated witnesses, all of which are felonies called obstruction of justice. Welcome to the new America. Your tax dollars at work.
Very good. And Mr. John Corbett, thank you for being here, too. You tell us what your position is briefly, if you don't mind.
Okay, well, I've been a long-time advocate of the Warren Commission report. There was a brief time during the early 1980s where I was swayed to the other side of the argument that I believe there was a conspiracy. But the more I looked into it, the more I saw that none of these conspiracy theories could stand up to any type of scrutiny whatsoever. The Warren Commission has been picked apart for 47 years now. It came out in September of 64.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all the criticisms, their core findings are still valid today. They presented an overwhelming amount of evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald fired the shots that killed John Kennedy and also later killed Officer J.D. Tippit. The assassination has been the most investigated crime in the history of the world. And in 48 years, none of these conspiracy theories or conspiracy theorists have been able to produce an ounce of credible evidence that anybody except Lee Harvey Oswald took part in this crime.
It's always interesting to talk to people who you.
That prompts two questions from me, Anton.
Sure.
If I may, I want to know exactly what led John Corbett to believe originally that there was a conspiracy.
It's funny, Tom, I was just about to ask that question. It's always interesting to talk to people who've felt one way about something and then they change. What was it that made you believe there was a conspiracy? And more importantly, what made you renounce that? I'm curious to know, too.
Okay, it was a gradual process both ways. I believe the Warren Commission, when it came out, of course, I was only a schoolboy back then. When the House Committee on Assassinations ruled that, in their opinion, there was a probable conspiracy, that got my attention, because that was the first time that any fact-finding body had reached that conclusion.
Right.
I still was not convinced. I think the thing that really pushed me to that side of the argument, and I'm going to guess at the date, but I think it was around 1980. If you remember Jack Anderson, he was at one time one of the best-known investigative reporters in the country. produced a television special, and his theory that he was putting forth was that the assassination was the work of the CIA in conjunction with organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
And he presented a pretty compelling case. And so I started to look into it a little bit more. But the thing that really first started me really getting skeptical about all conspiracy theories is the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald got his job at the Texas School Book Depository in early October. I think it was about roughly 6 weeks before the assassination. Now, at that time, the motorcade route had not been planned. Nobody knew that JFK was going to be riding past the school book depository on November 22nd. In fact,
Connolly knew it.
They weren't even sure they were going to have a motorcade.
John Connolly knew it.
John Connolly originally fought the idea of a motorcade because the Kennedy people wanted to make it the Texas trip a quick one-day trip in and out. And they finally convinced the White House staff that to make it a two-day trip. And once that was decided, then Connolly dropped his objections to the motorcade. There would be time for the motorcade because they had 2 days to visit all the cities they wanted to rather than one.
I heard that point before made. In fact, Chris Matthews made the point on his show Hardball about how Lee Oswald had the job weeks before they allegedly knew that the motorcade was going to go down that route. Mr. Rossley, is that true, or did Governor Connolly know that if they were going to take the motorcade, more than likely they'd go down that route?
Governor Connolly insisted that the luncheon be held at the trademark, mm-hmm. and he threatened to cancel the whole motorcade if it wasn't.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the White House staff yielded to Connolly as far as the detailed planning of the trip. So yes, I mean, Governor Connolly did want the trademark as the site for the luncheon. I believe at the time it was a fairly new building, kind of, you know, glitzy at the for the time, and I think he wanted to show it off, so he insisted that the luncheon be held at the trademark in the most logical way.
Get that information from? What's the source of that, John?
That's in the Warren Report. It's right in the first chapter, I believe.
Did John Connolly insisted on trademark because he wanted to show the building off?
I'm not sure where I read that part of it, but yeah, John Connolly wanted the trademark. Do you have another theory for why he wanted the trademark?
Because it would take the motorcade down Elm Street.
That's another thing they lied about. John Connolly, who was in the line of fire, helped to plan this assassination. Is that where you're going with this?
There was a big argument Thursday night about who was going to ride in the limo with Kennedy. They wanted Yarborough in the limo and John Connolly to ride with LBJ. You're not aware of that, John?
Are you arguing that John Connolly was in on the planning of the assassination?
That's not what I said, John. I said he insisted that the luncheon be held at the trademark.
And I agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you both a question just to get the meat of it. There's conflicting accounts on the structure of the back of President Kennedy's head. This is perhaps the most important facet of the assassination, because if the back of the head is blown out, that is evidence that there is a shot from the front. I'm sure both of you guys would agree with that.
Yep.
I want to get both your opinions on the claims made. First, I want to start with the Zapruder film. And I'll put the question to, I flip the coin, I'll put the question to Mr. Rossley first, if you don't mind, Mr. Corbett. Does the Zapruder film show the back of President Kennedy's head intact?
To me first?
Yes, sir.
All you got to do is read the Inside the AIIB, 5 volumes, written by Douglas Horn.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the Zapruder film is altered. The autopsy photos and pictures are altered. And he's the guy that interviewed everybody that handled him.
Okay. So you are saying the Zapruder film...
I didn't think it would take this long to get here, but this is where almost every conspiracy theorist ends up getting. Because the evidence is all against them, they have to take the position that the evidence is all bogus.
What do you think about the Zapruder film, Mr. Corbett, and especially, namely, about the structure of the back of President Kennedy's head?
Well, first of all, we see there's no blowout area in the back of the head. The blowout is along the right side of his head, above his ear. You can see a big flap of skull hanging down on the side of his face.
Well, what about the credibility of Mr. Rossley's claims that the autopsy pictures and the Zapruder film are tampered with?
Okay, Tom, could you tell us how many forensic autopsies Doug Horn performed in his career?
He's not a forensic autopsy. He's not a doctor.
But you,
he's an investigator.
You think he's qualified to second-guess people who are qualified?
You know, I just explained it to you, my friend. He interviewed everybody that handled it.
So you're taking the word of a rank amateur regarding
a rank
the
amateur
evidence over
and paid by the AIRB, my friend. I think that's a step above Little League Baseball.
Okay, Tom, why don't you tell us what Doug Horn's role when the AIRB was? What was he hired to do by the AIRB? The ARRB, I believe.
Like the medical evidence. And he did so by interviewing everybody that handled it.
No, that's not what he was hired to do. He was, his job was to look over the military records. And because the autopsy was performed at Bethesda by Army and Navy personnel, the autopsy fell into his jurisdiction. But he had absolutely no expertise to review medical evidence.
He had enough expertise to interview people.
He was a military expert, and as military expert, he was given the role of reviewing the military records, and because the autopsy was performed by the military, that fell under his jurisdiction. But he is an absolute layman when it comes to medical evidence.
Well, he's supported by Kay Spencer. Are you familiar with Kay Spencer, John?
No, I'm not. Who's he?
Kay Spencer is a she.
Okay.
See, I keep telling you, that's the disadvantage you people are at by not reading the evidence and testimony. All you do is take the word of proven liars, the Warren Commission.
Where did she testify?
Who screwed themselves. They screwed each other.
Who?
What did it say, though?
So, Senator Russell wanted his dissent put in the Warren Report.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had a special executive session meeting,
mm-hmm.
and he expressed his views, and they refused. They didn't publish it, that executive session.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Senator Russell signed the report. All seven commissioners.
But he was assured that his dissent would be included. I just said they screwed each other.
Pardon me? They did not agree on every point in the Warren Report. It would be almost impossible to get seven people to agree on every single thing written in an 888-page report.
Especially prostitutes like Jerry Ford, who stole Oswald's diary and sold it to Life magazine for $16,000. So you're supporting prostitutes also, are you, John?
Well, wait a minute, Tom. You kind of dodged the question. I asked who this Kay, what was her last name?
Hey, Spencer.
I asked who she testified in front of.
Hold on. Let me
get
it here.
All of a sudden.
It's on my website, John.
Pardon me?
It's on my website.
Mr. Rossley, just to let everybody know what your website is, by the way.
WhoKilledJFK.net. What's yours, John?
WhoKilledJFK.net. Okay.
I don't have a website, Tom.
You don't have a website.
Why would
you
I
don't put your
website?
Money where your mouth is, huh, John? Kay Spencer testified for the Assassination Records Review Board.
Testified.
And she's the one that took the photographs of the autopsy. She says they're not the same photographs that she took.
I read. That's interesting. You mentioned that, Mr. Ross. There's a book that I have.
Money's on my website.
Okay.
There was more than one photographer at the website at the autopsy,
as I
understand. So the pictures maybe were taken by the other photographer.
No, she's talking about the pictures that she took or developed. I forget which. But her testimony is on my website. You can check it out yourself.
So she's saying that the pictures that she supposedly took, she did not take.
Correct. The ones that she took or developed are not the same ones that the Warren Commission put into evidence.
Mm-hmm. The photographs were validated by the House Select Committee on Assassination. They brought the best photographic experts on board that they could.
Name them, John.
They validated all the autopsy material.
Who validated them, John?
They had a panel. They had a boat.
Name, John. I said name them. Name those experts that validated them.
You think I memorized every last one of them? I know Michael Bodden was the head of the...
Back it up, John.
And Cyril Wecht was on that committee, too.
And what did Cyril Wecht say about it?
Why would I want to memorize every last name on that panel? I could look it up if I have to. People don't have to...
Claims that I asked you to document it. You're either going to or you're not going to. Which is it?
Tom, do you know how ridiculous that is that you expect people... That if they don't have every last minutia memorized, that they're not informed about the assassination.
That's you're not informed. You admitted that the last time we debated, John. You don't have the 26 volumes.
I'm very well
volumes.
Informed on it.
Judge
I don't
committee
commit
volumes.
Everything to memory.
Committee
Albert
volumes.
Einstein couldn't even remember his own phone number. He had to look it up. And his explanation was, I've got too many more important things to think about.
John Corbett, are you equating yourself with Einstein, Albert Einstein? Is that
Absolutely
what you want these
not.
People to believe?
I'm not even in the league. You don't have to be to figure this case out. It is the most simple case of murder you will ever see.
Well, maybe in Nazi Germany or Communist Russia, John.
Years,
the country is determined by evidence and testimony with which you're not familiar. None of you felon supporters are familiar with the evidence and testimony.
There are 26 volumes of testimony and evidence.
Adam.
I think that any person would memorize every last bit of that is absolutely ludicrous. That is
well,
a reference
John, everything
material.
I say, I quote what volume and page it comes from.
Because you came here with talking points. You were able to look those up. But that doesn't mean that the things that, you know, because we don't know which chapter and verse you're quoting from that we're not informed, that is ludicrous.
John, I'm educating you people, and you're too dumb
to
do it.
We know what the primary evidence is.
To find it
if we have to look something up, we know where to look it up.
Okay.
That's what reference materials are for.
Mr. Rossley,
you don't have to memorize. Tom, let me ask you this.
Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I mean... Do you think a person has to know every word in the Bible to be a good Christian?
You got to know a good part of it, John. In my book, you asked me.
Oh, a good part of it. Okay, I know a good part of the of what's in the 26 volumes. Now, but you're claiming that the government engaged in this great big cover-up. And as evidence of your cover-up, you're pointing to the very evidence that they made public. If they were going to cover up the crime, why did they make all this information available to you, Tom?
Because most people were never going to read it. And
anybody would ever look at the 26
volumes. In an executive session.
And that's why they put everything into the 26 volumes.
They didn't put everything in. You're not even aware that a lot of documents are still withheld. You're not aware of that either.
I'm aware that there were some things that were withheld for security reasons.
Let me move on. Let me ask you guys this question. I asked about the Zapruder film in the back of President Kennedy's head. Now I want to get to Parkland Hospital. Personnel at Parkland Hospital, which, in case any people don't know, that was the hospital that they immediately drove to, which was it was in Dallas. Is that correct, gentlemen?
Correct.
Yeah. So they went to Parkland Hospital, and personnel at Parkland Hospital claimed that they saw, and the number I think is 21, if my memory serves me correctly, 21 trained medical personnel at Parkland Hospital claimed that they saw the back of President Kennedy's head blasted out. Mr. Corbett, what's your opinion about that?
Well, that's a very interesting observation, because JFK was wheeled into the emergency room flat on his back.
Mm-hmm.
He was never rolled over. The back of his head would have been against the gurney the entire time. Now, blood was oozing out from the openings in his head, and gravity naturally is going to take all that toward the back of the head. So that's
right.
Where all the blood and the brain matter would have oozed to, and it probably
One located on the skull, John.
Wait, Mr. Russell, let him just finish the point. Then you'll have the floor for however long you want.
So
I'm sorry, Mr. Corbett, what was that?
I mean, it's just the impression that was created, but nobody examined that wound closely at all. They were trying to stabilize his vital signs. That's what almost everybody was concerned with doing. Now, I'm sure when they took one look at him, they knew they were fighting a losing battle, but they gave it their best shot anyway. But nobody examined that head wound in any detail. That wasn't done until autopsy.
So pretty much what you're saying is they weren't even concerned about where the
right.
wound was.
Right. There was no reason that they were going to examine the head.
That hole could have been viewed from right field, John.
Pardon me?
The size of that hole in the back of the skull could be seen from right field. You didn't have to examine it.
Then why couldn't we see it in the Zapruder film?
Some people say you can.
Yeah, I think some people can see the face of Jesus in a potato chip, too. But I guess you can see what you want to see. But I think most people, if they looked at the Zapruder film, they would see that there's no evidence of a blowout in the back of JFK's skull. And there was no evidence of a blowout in any of the autopsy pictures.
Mr. Rossley, what is your opinion about the doctors who said that they saw the back of the head, the occipital parietal area, opened up?
They're professional doctors.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly qualified to describe a wound they observed.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings up another point. In the middle of her testimony, Jacqueline Kennedy, it says, description of wounds deleted. How does John explain that? The one witness closest to the victim actually held the victim's shattered head in her hands. And her description of the wounds is deleted from the official records? How do you explain that, John?
Why would that need to be in the official record? She's not a doctor. She's not qualified to describe the medical evidence.
She's certainly qualified to describe if there was a hole in the back of the head, John. That's what she was doing on the truck of the limousine, picking up a piece of his skull that was blown backwards by a shot from the right front. She carried it all the way to Parkland Hospital and handed it to Dr. Pepper Jenkins. You knew all this, didn't you, John? A well-read man like yourself?
About the piece of his head that was on the trunk, yes, I did.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, what purpose would be served by having a layperson describe the wound?
Because she was the closest witness to it, John. You're not aware. Maybe you don't use witnesses in Russia or Nazi Germany, but in this country we do.
Okay, what do you think they were trying to hide by deleting her testimony?
The back of the head being blown out, John.
Pardon me?
His nose wasn't on the trunk. It was a piece of skull. Where's the piece of skull with hair on it that Clint Hill saw on the back seat? That was never put into evidence either. Why did they discard that?
Why don't you answer that question and then tell us what that means?
It means that they destroyed evidence again. Within minutes of the shooting, they washed out the limousine at Parkland Hospital with a bucket of water.
I don't even know where to go with this.
John,
where is your evidence?
When yours,
how
the
do
same
you know
level
that somebody destroyed
evidence? That you advocate for others, okay?
Pardon me?
May God grant you and yours the same level of justice that you advocate for others.
I would be very happy to get the same justice that Lee Harvey Oswald...
I'd be more than happy to see it happen to you.
If I had shot the president, I would have deserved what Lee Harvey Oswald got. Let me tell you that. Lee Harvey Oswald would have been convicted in a 3-day trial, and he would have gotten the death penalty. Now, the only question we have at this point is, because the death penalty cases were under review for most of the 60s, there were very few executions, and he may have delayed his execution until the Supreme Court struck down all
any
of this.
In a courtroom, any charges against Oswald would have been thrown out of court.
That is so ludicrous.
Because the authorities tampered with evidence repeatedly. I got a list of a minimum of 24 cases in this case.
This is the other thing conspiracy theorists like to do. They appoint themselves, these amateur lawyers and judges, and they decide what evidence would be admissible and what is not admissible. You know, and they have absolutely no expertise in the legal area. They,
really?
Just as they have no expertise to examine medical evidence. They don't have any expertise to examine ballistic evidence. They're amateur sleuths, and they're trying to, you know, second-guess the work of the professionals. Now,
really?
if Tom Rossley is correct, from the very beginning, every single person who took part in investigating the crime, from the local police and sheriff's people to the Secret Service to the FBI to the people in the military who did the autopsy, to the independent crime labs who reviewed all that evidence for the Warren Commission, they were all in on this massive conspiracy. Now, Tom, do you think that they knew ahead of time that they're going to have to do a cover-up, or did these conspirators put this cover-up together after they shot JFK?
But it was set up in advance.
Pardon
John,
me?
Do you know who the prime suspect was that weekend? Other than Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yes.
Who?
Pardon me? Oswald.
Who was the
prime
suspect that weekend, other than Lee Harvey Oswald?
There were no prime suspects.
Oh, yes, there were, my friend. This is the disadvantage you have by not doing the reading of the study. You take the words of prostitutes.
Who are some other prime suspects in the murder?
FBI was the biggest suspect. That comes from Robert Kennedy's book, who was under Secret Service protection. And by Sunday night, he realized that the biggest suspect in the eyes of the Secret Service was the FBI, who happened to take over the case illegally. Isn't that wonderful?
That is so far off the deep end, Tom, I don't even know where to go with that.
Now, of course you don't know where to go with it.
But you think the Secret Service took part in the investigation, too. Were they in on the cover-up? Now, which side of this were they on? Were they in on the cover-up, or were they the ones accusing the FBI of doing the cover-up? You've kind of lost me.
They were in on the cover-up. It was a Secret Service agent named Moore that went and pressured Dr. Malcolm Perry to change his story about an entrance wound in the throat.
See, that's where you got to go. Everybody lied. Everybody was pressured to change their stories because you don't like the story they told on the record. Sworn testimony.
Even in the 26 volumes, John. Sergeant Dean.
In the 26 volumes where Dr. Perry said he was pressured to change his story. Quote exactly what he said, not your paraphrasing of what he said.
The following morning, Dr. Perry showed up for work late. And the nurse, Audrey Bell, says, "You look like hell." He says, "I didn't get any sleep." He says, "Why not?" She says, "I was on the phone all night with Washington. They're trying to get me to change the story about an entrance wound to the throat." How's that, John? Audrey Bell. You remember her, the nurse? As a matter of fact,
yes.
She was the head nurse of the operating room and recovery room. Matter of fact, she handled five or six fragments from Governor Connally's wrist alone, but yet there's only two in evidence. Where's the rest of them, John?
Now, you're talking about the fragments that were removed by Dr. Shaw. They were placed in an envelope.
That's right. By Audrey Bell.
Okay, let's take it your way. Let's say somebody stole three fragments. Why do you think they would steal three microscopic fragments?
Who said microscopic?
Microscopic?
Where did you get that word from, John?
Okay, microscopic was the wrong word, but they were very small
fragments. You know?
They were little slivers of metal. They were not big hunks.
John, where's the ones as big as the head of a pencil?
I don't know where they are, and I want you to tell me what somebody would be trying to cover up by stealing three little fragments.
Who said little? Where did that word come from, John? That's not in her testimony.
You're trying to claim that a cover-up was underway. And
what are the reasons?
Fragments as evidence of a cover-up.
What are the reasons why they would be missing? There's only two possible reasons, John.
Pardon me?
There's only two possible reasons. One is somebody wanted a souvenir.
First of all, you have to establish that somebody...
One is the fragments amounted to more than was missing from 399.
Because we don't know where they are does not mean that somebody deliberately made them disappear. Somebody may have, they may have been lost track of, or, you know, they may be in another file somewhere.
They're all together in the same envelope, signed and sealed by Audrey Bell.
What point?
The authorities.
Can you tell me what point? Three little metal fragments. Can you answer that question, Tom?
What?
I mean, if you're going to theorize a conspiracy, you probably ought to theorize one that makes a little bit of sense, don't you think?
I don't theorize anything. I quote you what you haven't read in your own records.
Tom, I've already granted you that you know more about what's in the 26 volumes than I do, because I don't feel it's necessary to know every last iota that's in those 26 volumes.
You check the word
if I need to know something, I know where to look for it.
You do, huh?
So let's quit playing that card.
Yeah, let me move on to the next question. Mr. Rossley, what does Kennedy's head movement back and to the left indicate, if anything?
Back from the right front.
I'm sorry?
A shot from the right front.
A shot from the right front.
Temple blew out the back of his head and blew his whole body backwards and to the left because it came from the right front.
Mr. Corbett?
Okay, first of all, the initial movement of JFK's head was forward. If you look at his position...
You mean when Greer stepped on the brake after the first shot?
Oh, would you let me finish one time, Tom?
Yeah, Mr. Russell, you have to let Mr. Corbett finish.
I let you answer the question. Now let me answer the question. Please do not interrupt me this time.
To make your point.
Go ahead, Mr.
Corbett. Is it my turn, Tom? Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
go ahead. If you look at the position of JFK's head in Zapruder frame 312 and compare it to where it is in Zapruder frame 313, which is the frame where his head exploded, his head is rocked forward. It's not a great deal, but it is a very definite movement. Somebody did a calculation, and you know this is beyond my level of expertise to do this, said his head moved forward 2.3 inches. So the initial movement was forward. Now, one of the big myths is that JFK went back and to the left. That is not the way he moved. If you look closely, you will see he was already leaning sharply to his left before the bullet hit. And when he went backward, he went straight back. And when his shoulder blades hit the car seat, he was still on the right side of the car seat. There was no leftward movement by JFK following the headshot. Now, what Oliver Stone did when he produced the movie, he ingrained back into the left in everybody's mind because he kept playing that same sequence of frames over and over again while Kevin Costner's saying, back into the left, back into the left.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an illusion that was created. If you look at both the Mormon photo, the Polaroid photo taken just about at the time of the headshot,
right,
as well as the Knicks, and I believe the Muchmore film shows it as well, you see how far JFK was already leaning to his left before that bullet even hit him. So his movement, while he was leaning left already, his movement following the headshot was straight back. Now, bullets cannot propel a human body in the way we see JFK moving back. Now, we can't prove what caused his body to rock back as violently as it did. But one thing we do know, it was not a bullet, because bullets do not move human bodies.
You took an elevator, do you, John?
Pardon me?
You don't think he took an elevator, do you?
What's an elevator got to do with it?
Well, it wasn't from a bullet. What was it?
The most likely explanation, and I hear again, I know of no way of proving this, but it's been the one that's been offered by medical experts, is probably a neuromuscular spasm triggered
by... It didn't exist for the first 12 years, John. For the first 12 years, we were told by your sweet friend, Dan Rather, the head goes forward with considerable violence. He was describing a film that we were never going to see. And he lied to speak about it.
Where in the 26 volumes did Dan Rather testify? You'll have to help me with that one because I don't think I could find that.
I did it on national television.
Oh,
he
so
told the American people
not,
what happened to Kennedy in his Zapruder film.
So we're out of official testimony now.
Sure, we're back into prostitution.
Pardon me?
We're back into prostitutes again. Dan Rather.
Dan Rather can speak for himself. I'm not going to defend Dan Rather, and he has nothing to do with any of the official findings.
Started on a lie in Dallas and ended on a lie in Washington.
You just love to talk over me, Don. You just will not let me finish a sentence, will you, Tom?
When you start
Dan
making
Rather,
sense, John, when you
Dan
start
Rather's,
quoting, when you start quoting official records, all right, John?
I want to just do a monologue, Tom.
Yeah,
I'll just sit back
Mr.
and listen.
You have to let Mr. Corbett finish the point.
Okay. Dan Rather was not part of any official finding. Dan Rather can defend his own words. I'm not here to defend Dan Rather. There's a lot of things Dan Rather did over his career that I wouldn't try to defend. But what does that have to do with your claim that there was an official cover-up? Dan Rather was not part of any official cover-up. Dan Rather was not part of the official investigation. Dan Rather was a local newsman in Dallas at the time who became prominent largely because of his work on the JFK assassination, because he was the guy that CBS went to as their man in Dallas.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, Mr. Corbett, is the reason President Kennedy's head went back, or body went back into the left was because it was some kind of neurological effect.
That seems to be the best explanation, but, I mean, the idea that a bullet could have propelled him backwards like that, anybody who has any understanding of physics knows that a bullet does not have that kind of throw weight, and we have ample examples of films of people being shot, war footage, firing squad odds. You just cannot predict which way a person will fall after they're being shot. Sometimes they fall towards the shooter, sometimes away from the shooter, sometimes they fall sideways, sometimes they just drop straight down. But it is not the force of a bullet. It is gravity that is usually in play. Now, in this case, the neuromuscular reaction, while I don't know how you would possibly prove this, but now the Army did do tests shooting animals such as goats, and they showed that there is a neuromuscular reaction when you shoot an animal in the back of the head.
Okay.
Now, does that prove that that's why JFK moved backwards? No, it doesn't. But it seems to be the most logical explanation.
Well, that gets me to the next question. I want to pose it to Mr. Rossley. What evidence is there that there was a shot from the grassy knoll?
Because that's where everybody raced to, everybody, including people directly under the sixth-floor window. They all raced to the grassy knoll where the shots came from. And when Officer J.M. Smith got behind the fence, he encountered civilians. He drew his service revolver. The civilians identified themselves as Secret Service, so he let them go. There were no Secret Service agents on the ground that day. They were all in the motorcade. They all stayed with the motorcade all the way to Parkland Hospital. Warren Commission chose not to investigate who was impersonating Secret Service agents that day behind the picket fence.
Mr. Corbett?
Okay. Tom, is there any... Okay, you say all these people raced up the hill. Did they see a shooter? Did anybody see a shooter?
You mean actually firing?
Firing?
Some
or...
people saw a puff of smoke and a flash of light coming from behind the fence.
Okay, a puff of smoke and a flash of light. And the only thing that could cause a puff of smoke is a gunshot.
Well, there are many things that can cause a puff of smoke.
Okay,
but a gunshot is one of them. During the shooting, yeah.
Okay, a flash of light in broad daylight, a gun's not going to give off that kind of a flash that would be visible, especially if you're behind him. I think you're referring to Lee Bowers.
He's one of them. Plus his skinny...
Now, Lee Bowers said there was nobody behind the fence.
Oh, yes, there was.
He had a perfect view of the area behind the fence.
Yeah.
He didn't see a shooter.
He saw three people run and jump into a freight car, a coal car. He stopped the train and notified the police. They took 11 hobos off of that train. Three of whom that marched across Dealey Plaza to the sheriff's office.
Do you know what time those hobos were arrested?
Yeah, about 2:15.
No, it was much later in the afternoon.
It was? What time was it?
I don't know the exact time, but if you look at the shadows, if you look at the...
I don't know, John. I'm asking for documentation. What time was it?
Okay, you're trying to get away from the Lee Bowers. Did Lee Bowers see a shooter behind the fence?
No, he saw a puff of smoke. He saw a flash of light during a shooting sequence.
No shooter. That's what I wanted to see. Lee Bowers had a perfect view of the area behind the fence, and he didn't see a shooter. There was no shooter that Lee Bowers saw. But you're going to take from a puff of smoke and a flash of light that he saw a shooter. Is that your best evidence of a shooter on the knoll?
Lee Bowers saw a shooter.
Okay, I got a question for both of you, and this may get to the meat of it better. Who were the closest people to the grassy knoll at the time of the shooting?
Zapruder and Sitzman. Abraham Zapruder and his secretary, Marilyn Sitzman.
Okay, did they see...
He said the shots came from behind him, which was the picket fence.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to. Yeah,
I'm a little fuzzy on the name. Gordon Arnold, is that one of the people?
Gordon Arnold was the... Tom, who is Gordon Arnold again? I know.
Soldier.
So yeah, that's
and he
right.
was up on the knoll too, wasn't he?
Yep, on the side of the fence. Yep.
On which side? He's on the Elm Street side of the fence.
Nope.
Oh, he was on the other side of the fence.
Nope. He was outside the fence on the walkway.
Okay, he's on the walkway.
You ever been to Dallas?
He was outside. He was on the opposite side of the fence from Lee Bowers.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he's up there. Did he see a shooter?
He didn't see one. He saw the effects of one. He said a bullet whizzed past his ear.
Well, everybody in Dealey Plaza saw the effects of the gunshot, yeah. Everybody saw JFK's head explode, but that doesn't identify where a shooter was.
He said that a bullet whizzed past his ear from behind the fence.
And you can tell when a bullet whizzes past you what direction it's traveling?
Well, you can hear the shot first, John.
Yeah, you can hear the shot. Now, a lot of people thought they heard the shot coming from the knoll. And a lot of people thought they heard the shots coming from the book depository.
Then why did everybody race to the knoll, John?
The difference is, Tom, that there's physical evidence that shots were fired from the book depository. There was an eyewitness who saw shots fired from the depository.
A newsman,
no
John.
Eyewitness who
a
saw
newsman.
Shots. There is no eyewitness who saw shots fired from the grassy knoll. We have the still photo by Mary Moorman. We have the Much More film, and we have the next film. None of those showed anything, showed any shooter on the grassy knoll. Okay, but we have in the Texas Book Depository, in the very window where the eyewitness said the shooter fired from, we have three spent shells. On the opposite side of the
originally, it was only two spent shells, John. Those are official records.
There were three spent shells, Tom. Don't be...
They keep changing their story, John. Don't you understand me?
Pardon me?
They keep changing their story.
Well, okay, let me ask you. According to the warrant...
The story was two spent shells, John.
There were three spent shells photographed in the sniper's nest, Tom.
Those were reenactments Monday morning, John. You weren't aware of that either, were you?
No. There may have been a reenactment Monday morning, but the shells were photographed. And they found three shells in the sniper's nest.
Now, my friend.
You're making things up now, Tom.
Well, Fritz picked them up and put them in his pocket and later threw them down. So they weren't photographed in their original position. And that comes from a Warren Commission supporter.
There were three spent shells, and they were positively identified to Lee Harvey Oswald's rifle, which was found on the other side of the floor by the staircase.
John, I've got an FBI picture right in front of me, and it says, two spent shells and a live round, and they're standing up on a desk.
On a desk, not in the sniper's nest.
No, not in the sniper's nest, John. Those photographs of the shell casings on the floor were done Monday. I've already told you that. And here's a report.
You've told some.
And here's an official report. Who spent 6.5 holes found under window?
Okay,
right.
Let me ask you.
And that's dated. That's a police department report. And it's dated November 26th. Are you following this, John?
I'm trying to follow you, Tom, but you're taking me places I've never been before.
I know it, John, because you're not familiar with the evidence.
I've ever heard claim that
there
were only
crookers and liars.
You are the very first person in all the years I've been dealing with conspiracy theorists who've claimed there were only two spent shells in the sniper's nest.
No, I'm not claiming it, John. I'm reading the official report.
You're misinterpreting what they're telling you, Tom.
Really? Even the picture with two spent shells and one live round?
Well,
I'm misinterpreting that, John.
I can't see a picture on the telephone, Tom. But
it's on my website, John. Just scroll down to two. It says, two shells found. That button is all you got to do. Okay, John?
Okay,
and right below it.
Two of the shells that were found. That does not say there was not also a third shell. They may have been examining that. Somebody else may have been examining it. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
That's why you can't make a case for something.
How about the written report,
Josh?
How about the written report? Police department.
Mr. Rossley, just let him. Just let Mr. Corbett finish his point he's making.
Well, all he's telling me is what he don't know, and I already know that. He doesn't have the 26 volumes.
There's
the
goes
by the word of prostitutes and liars.
This minutiae you come up with and these things that you try
to
invent a conspiracy theory out of. But when you start to tell us that there are only two spent shells found there, when the people who found the shells said they found the three shells there.
Uh-huh.
So
we're talking about
that?
People that intimidate witnesses and suborn perjury.
Okay, so now we got to play that card. The witnesses got intimidated. Everybody got intimidated. Everybody was lying. Everybody was in on it. That's where every conspiracy theory.
You've got it at your fingertips. Look up the testimony of Sergeant Patrick Dean, and he'll tell you how they intimidated him. Promised to help him in his future career, police department career, if you testify the way they wanted him to.
Okay.
Here's
so
another
that
official report.
Okay, so you put all this faith in the 26 volumes, but then now, on the other hand, you're going to tell us everything in it is a lie.
No, I didn't say that. I said the Warren report was a lie. You don't know the difference between the report and the volumes, do you, John?
Yes, I do. In fact, I got the Warren report right here in my lap. It would be a little bit awkward to have the 26 volumes here in my lap, but...
the 26 volumes, John.
Well,
you've already admitted that you don't have the 26 volumes.
I just want to interject real quick. Just to make this go by faster, Mr. Rossley, I think what Mr. Corbett's saying is that you're saying that the witnesses were coerced into saying something under oath, and then you say also that the evidence and testimony is credible. I think that's the point that Mr. Corbett's making. Am I right, Mr. Corbett?
Yeah, I'm trying to decide whether Tom is claiming that everything in the 26 volumes is lies because it was all coerced, or everything the 26 volumes are the evidence of a cover up. I mean,
right? That's
the
point that
ways.
Mr. Corbett's making. Yeah.
The 26 volumes prove that elements of government and national media repeatedly withheld evidence, altered evidence, destroyed evidence, lied, suborned perjury, and intimidated witnesses.
But then they put all that stuff that they all that evidence that they supposedly withheld. But then put it in the 26 volumes for the whole world to read.
No, they didn't. Like Lee Harvey Oswald's note to FBI Richard Hosey, they didn't put that in because they destroyed it.
All this stuff that you're pointing to, which you claim is evidence of a cover-up, was put there by the people you claim are doing the cover-up. Is that what you're saying?
Like Alan Dulles said, don't worry about it. American people don't read anyway, and you're proof of that.
And you really think that those people thought they would publish those 26 volumes and that nobody would look at it? They're right that most people will not read it. Most people haven't even read the Warren Report itself. But to think that nobody was going to examine those 26 volumes with a fine-tooth comb, I mean, if that was what they thought, they had to be the stupidest conspirators that ever lived. They had to know all that material was going to be reviewed. So if that material is evidence of a cover-up, why would the people doing the cover-up make all that evidence of the cover-up available? That's what I'm trying to understand.
They didn't know what the right hand was doing, John.
Oh, they didn't know what... Who didn't know? You mean somebody snuck those 26 volumes out, the commissioners didn't know that that was going to happen?
Well, okay, let me move on to the next point I was going to make. And I wanted to make the point when you gentlemen were discussing the photographs that were altered or not altered. What about the backyard photographs? That's been one of the damning pieces. And Mr. Rossley, you probably know the answer better than I do about this. About there was on the Time Life magazine, on the cover of a magazine, about a year after the assassination, they posted pictures of Lee Oswald, the alleged backyard photographs.
133A, yep.
Yeah. Are those photographs authentic or are they fake?
Well, if you look at it, the pistol is in an elongated holster,
mm-hmm.
like a cowboy 6-inch revolver.
Yeah.
But Oswald had a 2-inch barrel in his gun, and he had a very small holster recovered from his rooming house.
Hmm.
So that sure ain't Oswald's gun and holster in that photograph, is it?
You don't think it's possible to put a gun with a 2-inch barrel into a holster that was 6 inches long?
Yep.
Okay, a 2-inch barrel won't fit into a 6-inch holster. Is that what you're telling us?
My point is, why didn't he use the small holster that was recovered from his rooming house?
I guess that's one of the mysteries of life that we're just never going to know the answer to, Tom.
I'm going to repeat it, John.
Is that your evidence?
The same level of justice that you advocate for others.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Rossley. Isn't it true that the House Select Committee on Assassinations determined that the photographs were authentic?
Yes, they did. But I never heard him address the holster. Never. In any one of the 12 volumes. There were 12 Kennedy volumes and 13 Martin Luther King volumes.
Okay, so what's your point? That what, Oswald was stupid for not using the right size holster when he posed for the pictures?
No, it just tells me that it's not Oswald.
Oh, so it would make more sense for the people faking the photo to use the wrong size holster when they posed the guy for the picture.
Criminals aren't the brightest guys on God's earth, John.
Well, apparently, these guys, I'm not sure if they were the smartest guys ever lived or the dumbest guys that ever lived. It seems like they seem to be going back and forth. Apparently, they were smart enough to pull off the assassination and the cover-up and get away with it for 48 years, but they couldn't do the most simple things right.
They didn't get away with it, John.
Okay.
But the law and order in this country has gone downhill markedly. The respect for political leadership in this country has gone downhill markedly. The respect for national media in this country has gone downhill markedly. So they didn't get away with it.
Well, I guess
who got nailed? One person was ever indicted for the murder of JFK. That was Clay Shaw.
Yeah.
And he was acquitted in 45 minutes after a month-long trial.
Uh-huh.
Because the case was so weak.
Yeah. And how closely did you follow that case, John?
Did I follow it every day? No, it was in high school. I was interested in a few. There were other things I was interested in when I was in high school, Tom.
Oh, you were in high school during the Clay Shaw trial, John?
Yeah, I was in high school during the Clay Shaw trial.
Wow. You were a young fella.
Well, so the backyard photographs, Mr. Rossley, you think that they're fake based on the holster Oswald was wearing. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that and the Marina's testimony. Don't forget, she was taken into what they call protective custody. Nobody had access to her until she appeared before the Warren Commission. And they showed her Commission Exhibit 133A. She says, yeah, I took that picture. So then they showed her 133B, and she didn't remember taking two pictures, but she said, because she's trying to accommodate them, she says, well, maybe I pressed the button twice. Impossible. With that Imperial Reflex camera, you have to forward the film, advance the film, or you're going to have a double exposure. And then years later, 133C showed up in the possession of Roscoe White.
Right. So do you believe do you believe Marina's testimony when she said that she did take the picture that 132A?
Yeah.
Oh, so she did take one of the backyard photographs. You think one of
them? Said.
Out of the three, you think at least one of them is real?
I don't know.
Okay.
There are so many questions in this thing. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand. This is probably one of the most provocative questions. Who was Lee Harvey Oswald? I want to ask Tom this question. Mr. Rossley, a lot of people claim that Mr. Oswald was stupid, some crazy nut, when in reality he occupied a fairly high position in the Army and he stayed at some of the best hotels. Also, his trip to the Soviet Union was taken under circumstances where no commercial transportations were made. What does this indicate to you?
That he was a spy. Mm-hmm. He got a military flight to Helsinki, and he thought he was entitled to a military flight to come back home.
Mr. Rossley, do me a favor and refute the notion that Lee Harvey Oswald was just some loser who was a nobody in the Army and all that stuff. That's not true, is it?
When you look at his diary, mm-hmm. he had a working knowledge of five different languages: English, Russian, German, Japanese, and Spanish. And that's one of the criteria that the CIA looks for. That's the first criteria that they look for, is languages.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had a crypto security clearance. Mm-hmm. There's from the bottom up, okay? There's confidential, there's secret, there's top secret, there's crypto, and then there's eyes only.
Mm-hmm.
And Oswald had a crypto clearance. That's testimony from the guy that replaced him.
And he was an operator for the U-2.
He was a radar operator at three top-secret U-2 bases around the world.
And that's a pretty high position, is it not?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
That's before anybody ever heard of a U-2 plane.
Right. Now, tell people about his trip to the Helsinki, or to Finland, well, same thing, and then to the Soviet Union, and how you think it's more credible that it was done under governmental circumstances than a commercial trip there.
Well, he left the United States by boat.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see.
Okay.
I guess he landed in France, Le Havre, France.
Mm-hmm.
Then he traveled to England. And from England to Helsinki, there were no commercial airlines during that time frame.
Right.
And he told Marina that he got a military flight to Helsinki. That's on the Russian border. And he crossed over. And he said he was going to give them military secrets. And he also did radio shows in Russia.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Are any of those available? Are there any of those?
Not that I found.
Oh, okay. No, I was just curious.
But Marina says he did radio shows. That had to be for propaganda purposes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
A Marine defector. And incidentally, that's the same time frame that the CIA was running a fake defector program. And it's the same time frame that the CIA printed up fake manuals on the U-2 plane. And
right.
If you read Gary Powers' book, Operation Overflight, he seems to think that Oswald made it possible for him to be shot down.
Mr. Corbett. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Rossley.
Decided he wanted to come back to the States with his wife and baby, and the State Department loaned him the money, $400 and some odd.
And he paid it back in a very relatively short period of time.
And he paid back for
the State Department to help Americans who get stranded, overseas, to help them get back.
He wasn't stranded; he was defected.
Well,
and he paid back the money in bigger increments than he was earning, which is a little suspicious, unless he was getting that $200 a month from the FBI that was discussed in the Warren Commission's executive sessions, a dirty rumor that has to be squashed, not investigated, but squashed.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble is, the rumor had some details. His number was S-172, and he's getting $200 a month.
Mr. Corbett, what do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's routine for the State Department to loan Americans overseas money to get back home. I mean, that's
name somebody, John.
Pardon me?
If it's routine, name somebody that got money from the State Department to come home on. Definitely name a defector.
No. Okay. This whole thing that they were doing something out of the ordinary is just silly. And it doesn't.
John, you made a claim, and you want to back it up, aren't you?
It does not prove that he was a spy, a planted defector, a double agent, or anything of the sort.
Really?
All you're doing is you're speculating. That's all this is. It's wild speculation. There's no evidence.
It's not as wild as a single bullet theory, John.
Pardon me?
It's not as wild as the single bullet theory. You seem to swallow that pretty easily.
I hope we get to the single bullet theory.
Yeah, we will.
You do know who Harold Weisberg is.
I certainly do. He was a personal friend of mine before he died.
Okay. And one of the things he said before he died is one of his biggest regrets is that he was never able to establish a connection between Oswald and the intelligence community. And he almost made that one of his missions in life, and he was never able to do that.
When did he say that, John?
I wish I could cite you the source.
Cite anything you say, John.
Okay, are you denying he said that?
Until you can prove it, yeah. As I said, Harold Weisberg was a personal friend of mine. I spent a whole day at his home.
Did he ever establish a connection between Oswald and the intelligence community?
Not that I know of.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so
your good buddy and a guy who's widely known in both by conspiracy theorists and Warren Commission defenders, as a player in the assassination research community, and to the best of your knowledge, he was never able to establish that Oswald had a connection to the intelligence community.
Okay. Well, I guess what you'll do, Mr. Corbett, if you don't mind, is once you find that, if you could forward that to me, I'll provide it out. If that's okay.
Okay, I mean, I'll have to find the quote, and
I'm citing
it from memory, and maybe I shouldn't have quoted.
Harold Weisberg books do you have, John?
I haven't read any of Harold Weisberg's books. I used to see him quite frequently on television.
Okay, but John, don't you know that television is designed for entertainment?
Okay, but you just told me that, to the best of your knowledge, he was never able to establish any connection to the intelligence community.
And I can't establish a connection between you and Jesus Christ. Does that mean Jesus Christ never existed?
That's a whole different. I don't argue religion, Tom, with anybody for any reason. Let's stay on the assassination.
No business arguing assassination either.
So
we don't have any of the volumes.
Your good buddy and a guy that we both recognize as a serious researcher on the subject, and to the best of your knowledge, he was never able to establish a connection. So if he couldn't establish a connection, what reason is there for us to believe that there was, that Oswald was part of the CIA or was an operative or had any connection at all?
By the testimony of the guy that replaced him.
Okay, why don't you quote that? Tell us who that was, and why don't you tell us what he said?
I'm trying to look it up now, John. Just bear with me for a moment.
Oh, you don't have that memorized? Boy,
I'm Al Verb, Al Weisberg. Hold on. Al Verb.
Well, it's nice to know, Tom, that not even you have everything memorized.
Never claimed that I did, John. Never claimed that I did.
But you seem to think I should have all this stuff at the tip of my tongue.
What? I didn't hear your last remark, John.
I said, but you think I should have all this information at the tip of my tongue. I'm just trying to understand what the rules are here. Okay, well, Tom's looking that up.
I wanted to ask. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Burford,
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, are we going to get to the single bullet theory? I hope
we are. I wanted to ask one last question about the intelligence, then we'll get to the single bullet theory. I just wanted to ask, and I'll ask you, Mr. Corbett, first, while Mr. Russell is looking. He could maybe answer this and get what he's looking at. Oswald's connection to Guy Bannister in New Orleans, the 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Street connection, does that raise any suspicion in your mind, Mr. Corbett?
I mean, he listed one address in that building, which was on one street, and then around the corner was Guy Bannister's office.
Right.
I mean, is that evidence of what?
Well, they were the same. They were both doors that went up to the same room, right?
I believe there was a connection between the two rooms, yeah.
So,
but, I mean, there's no evidence that Oswald had an office there.
Well, he had it stamped on one of his leaflets, right? 544 Camp Street?
Right.
Which was a side address of Guy Bannister's office?
Yeah, that is true. But, I mean, what do we make of that?
What we make of it is that Lee Oswald had a connection to Guy Bannister, who no one disputes has.
Well, let's say for sake of argument that he and Guy Bannister were both CIA operatives. Mm-hmm. Would it make any sense for him to publish that on a leaflet?
That's an interesting point.
Well,
Mr. Russell,
he didn't wear a sign around his neck saying that he was a CIA agent, John. They don't do that.
Yeah, and I don't think that he would, you know, if he was trying to conceal who he was, that he would put something so naked as to put list an address that would automatically allow people to connect him to Guy Bannister. If he was trying to conceal, you know, if he was supposed to be this, I don't know what you call him, secret operative.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that as a kid, his favorite show was I Led Three Lives, don't you? The story of Herb Philbrick, who was an FBI informant, communist, and advertising agent.
You're saying Oswald was an FBI informant?
No, that's what they talked about in the Warren Commission's executive session, John.
They asked, they were asking the question, and they probably threw a lot of ideas around in their executive session. Some of them floated, some of them didn't.
No, they didn't ask the question, John. They said they got a dirty rumor that has to be squashed. That's what they said. Does that sound like a good investigation to you?
Okay, how do you know that?
Like a good investigation to you, John.
How do you know that they said this is a rumor we have to squash?
Because I've got the executive sessions. A matter of fact, it's on my website. All you got to do is read it. I'll have somebody read it to you, John.
And so they're trying to squash the evidence of this, but then they put it in a record. Is this another one of these, is this the dumb conspirators?
That's what it was never going to be released, John. It was obtained through Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by Harold Weisberg.
Okay, why don't you quote exactly what they said? What they said, not your spin on what they said.
Okay, you want me to read it to you?
Yeah, verbatim.
Very good. Hold on. How about this one?
How is Guy Bannister connected to the JFK assassination? I mean,
selling guns for the anti-Castro Cubans, and he was CIA. He was formerly head of the FBI in Chicago.
Connections.
Where he's from, and where District Attorney Henry Wade is from.
Well, everybody's from somewhere.
Sure. Glad you asked, John. I'm surprised you don't know all this stuff. It's your report.
Mr. Rossley, did you find what you were looking for? Or no?
Yeah, here it is. Hold on.
Okay. No, there's no problem. I remember the book Case Closed by Gerald Posner when that came out. And Gerald Posner conceded in the book that if there was a connection between Lee Oswald and Guy Bannister, then that would damn a lot of his theories. I remember reading that in his book. Not sure if that's totally logical, but...
I'd follow this one. If Oswald was handing out pro-Castro literature, and you're a pro-Castroite, and you follow that direction and go to 544 Camp Street, wouldn't you be exposing yourself to an anti-Castro organization that you're a pro-Castroite?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Does John,
I mean, that's the same.
Did
he
see that, or is that his head?
Well,
the question I asked is where in the executive committee did they say we have to squash this rumor that Oswald was an FBI informant?
John, I'm looking it up now.
Okay.
All right.
May 22nd, 1964. That's where you'll find it, John.
Okay, but you don't have the exact quote available.
Oh, yeah, but I'm having trouble reading it. See, what I do with these small files is I save them to my desktop and blow them up, easier to read. And I don't want to take that kind of time.
Okay, so we'll just take your word for it that the FBI said, or the Warren Commission.
Told you where you can find it. It's on my website.
Okay, Tom.
Or you can go online and find it. January 22nd, 1964.
Okay, did we want to move on to another subject?
Yeah, the single bullet theory, Mr. Corbett, what's your opinion about that? Do you consider it the single bullet fact, or
is it the one and only explanation?
No, it isn't.
The shooting.
Wait, Mr. Rossley,
is the one and only explanation of the shooting that fits all the available evidence. And it is almost to the point I would call it a single bullet fact.
You have to.
If you try to reconstruct the shooting without the single bullet theory, you're going to need many magic bullets, not just one. Now, it has been demonstrated in numerous ways that JFK and John Connally were in perfect alignment to both be hit by the same bullet. They've done lasers, they've done computer graphics, but the clincher for the single bullet theory, and I'd like to point the listeners to a very good website put together by David Von Payne. I'm sure Tom's very familiar with him.
Oh, they're
and
great
I
friends.
I asked his permission if I could point to this. The website is www.single-bullet-theory.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it allows you to toggle between two frames. The key sequence is as JFK and John Connolly are reemerging from behind the sign. Most people, when they look at the Zapruder film, and I was one of them for years and years till I saw this, believe that JFK was reacting to his wound when he came out from behind the sign. But if you look carefully at the frame by frame and toggle back and forth, you can see that for one frame after he reappeared, he was not reacting. His right arm was coming down. It was not going up.
When he came out from behind the sign, you can see his left arm, not his right arm.
You see his right hand. His right hand is the one, is the key. Let me finish. Okay.
Yeah.
Between 223 and 224, we see the lapel bulge out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's evidence a bullet has passed through, has already passed through both men. So at that point, they've both been shot, but they don't, you know, you do not react immediately. Okay, so for several frames...
Was it windy in Dallas? Hey, John?
Let me finish the point, then.
And while I'm talking, you find that quote we were asking for. Then if you go between 224 and 225, we don't see JFK's face in Zapruder 224. But what we do see is his right hand. And if you go between 224 and 225, his right hand is going down. 225 is the first frame where we actually see JFK's face. So at the point where he reemerged, he had not yet started to react. Then if you toggle between Zapruder 225 and 226, we see something very curious happen. JFK's right arm jerks upward. And if you look closely at Connolly, at the exact same frame, John Connolly's right arm jerks up forward. They looked like two puppets on the same string. They were both coming up simultaneously. So to me, that was the clincher. Any doubts I had about the single bullet theory? When you see that, and it's in a close-up, enhanced version of this Pruder film, you can see that both men reacted at exactly the same time. Both of them raised their arms at precisely the same instant. And that, to me, is the best evidence yet that both men were hit at the same time by the same bullet.
Right. Okay. Oh, someone just...
John, was it windy in Dallas that day?
I think he accidentally hung the phone up because I heard a noise the noise it makes when someone hangs a phone up. Oh, all right. There it is.
And John, I'm back.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry, yeah. Mr. Rusty, what were you saying?
Yeah, I've got a question in reference to his last remarks. John, was it windy in Dallas that day?
There was some wind, yes.
Where did the wind come from? North, south, east, or west?
You'll have to tell me that.
From the north.
Okay.
And where's the picket fence in relationship to Elm Street? North, east, south, or west?
Where was what in relation to Elm Street?
The picket fence, the grassy knoll. Where was that in relation?
That was on the north side of Elm Street.
Savoy. Now, do you realize that the hole in Connolly's jacket was 6 or 7 inches below the lapel? Are you aware of that?
Yes.
And you think a bullet went through there and it affected his lapel? Is that what you think?
Yes, I do.
Atta boy, John. Thank you. As they say in court, I'll rest is my case.
The lapel is the coat is all one piece. If the bullet goes through the coat, it's going to pull the whole thing out.
Seen a good picture of Connolly's jacket, John?
Pardon me?
Have you seen a good picture of Connolly's jacket?
Yes.
And you think that a bullet going through way down there is going to affect that lapel?
There,
that's what you
right,
think.
It's right there. It's right. It came out right below his right nipple.
Well, I'm talking about relationship to the lapel, John. The hole in the jacket.
Well, yeah. I think the nipple is in relation to his lapel. That's how low it hit. I mean, I think that gives people a little better reference on radio than referring to a photograph that nobody can see.
Well, a clear picture of that jacket will be on my website. I mean, you asked for it right at the top of the page.
Fine,
before I go to bed tonight.